My consulting practice used to be called Chief Listening Officers. And I got a few eye rolls on that, like, oh, that's clever, or that's cute, like very condescending. So what ended up happening was it filtered out, the name Chief Listening Officers did filter out people that I didn't want to talk to anyway. And the people who said, that's interesting, what is that? I love that. What is that? Those are the people I wanted to talk to. And those are the people that led to good things for me. I want to meet curious leaders, and everything that needs to happen after that will happen.
Hi, I'm Bob Mathers, and welcome to The Growth Mixtape, a podcast where I talk to the most interesting people you might not have come across yet. I find that these conversations give me new insights and perspectives about topics I didn't know existed. These conversations might not seem to have a lot in common at first. Just like songs and a mixtape, it creates something memorable and emotional. Today we talk to Bob London, or as I call him, Mr. Curious. Bob is basically a professional listener. He's an expert in helping people connect and understand one another, and is the mastermind behind the idea of radically authentic discovery. Now, this idea of curiosity is something I'm incredibly passionate about, and it's basically what this podcast is all about. So this conversation meant a lot to me. I talked to Bob about chasing our curiosity in both our professional and personal lives, and he shares practical tips on building richer relationships by embracing awkward silences and simply shutting the fuck up. Please enjoy Bob London. Welcome, Mr. Bob London, to the podcast. I'm so glad we were able to make this happen. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Been looking forward to this.
Yeah, me too. So I've called you Mr. Curious in the past. I don't know whether that's going to stick or whether it's got any legs.
Why do you say that?
That's a joke. Well, how do you feel about that moniker?
I think it's great. I can think of a lot of other things that, you know, sort of in the world of noise in which that we inhabit, that everyone wants to be known as a famous talker, speaker, presenter. And I think curiosity is undervalued and underleveraged. So I'll take it. I did at one point I might've had the domain name curiousbob.com, but I'm not sure. I actually think I might have. So I'll take it.
I'm going to check that later. Maybe. So, you know, the more interesting brother of Curious George, something like that.
Yeah, well, he was a monkey, so I guess I'll have to figure out how to position that, but yes.
So it was funny. My wife was asking me earlier, you've got an episode today. Who have you got on? And I described her. I had a little bit of a hard time, even though we've worked together and I've gotten to know you, describing what you do for a living. So when you meet people at a cocktail party and they say, oh, Bob, what do you do for a living? What do you tell them?
Well, first of all, that means I'm doing a poor job of explaining it, especially since we've worked together. But I guess it also says that I'm so focused on being curious and listening that I'm less good at positioning what I do. But I help companies do a much better job of understanding what their customers really need. And that comes in the form of A, helping them or doing for them customer listening tours, which is an open-ended exploration of what customers really think about what problems they really have and what their perceptions really are of my client as a customer. And also, as you know, and how we've worked together, is teaching teams how to have more strategic, revealing conversations with customers by a set of techniques that I've collectively called radically authentic discovery. So I teach companies how to get a better understanding of what their customers are really all about and what they need. And by extension, that helps my clients grow and keep customers.
Yeah, it's interesting, as when I'm listening to you describe that, my immediate reaction is, well, I think a lot of companies would claim to be customer centric. And yet the fact that you're making a good living doing this seems to suggest that there's a gap there that between perception and reality.
Well, I think it tells you everything you need to know that companies are running around saying they're customer centric. And we are all customers, so we all know that that's not always true. And the customer centricity is too often it's a myth. In our world, technology companies, the founder comes upon an insight or an idea, which could be completely valid. And what gets built as a product has to be based on what problems customers say they really have and how they would be solved. And if the company did a good job of building the right product to the right need, that company can be very successful. But if they didn't, then they will still say they're customer centric, and they'll say it until they go out of business. What I hear a lot of times is that there's a founder who is on his or her second venture, and they say, didn't do a good job the first time of listening, want to do a better job this time, listening to understand. But you're right. I think the fact that I'm making a living at this is a signal that a lot of companies do understand that gap. They understand that they have a gap between the way they behave and what they say about being customer centric. So I'm helping them close that gap. And a lot of times what I tell them is customers think we vendors do a horrible job at discovery and listening. And yet those are two of the three most important things that drive buyer behavior out of a list of, 15 attributes.
Yeah.
I just have to ask, did I do a better job? I mean, do you think you'll be better at explaining to people what I do?
Yes, I think so. And by the way, the fact that I didn't have a great answer for my wife is not a reflection on you.
Look, I'm the first to admit I'm very critical of my own marketing and, the cobbler's children, because I used to be a marketer. So I'm always looking for ways to sharpen it and make it more focused. And so I don't take it personally. I take it as a challenge to get better at that.
Yeah, I should also say that I'm actually really bad at describing what I do for a living to my wife. If you ask my wife and my best friends what I do for a living, you'd get a lot of different answers.
That's interesting.
I wanted to provide a little bit of kind of context for this conversation, because you and I have talked a little bit about this. And this idea of curiosity is something that I've been a bit obsessed over really since starting this podcast. My very first guest was a guy named Rob Carley, who's a music producer. And in the course of the conversation, we talked about how curiosity can really be something, really be a tool to uncover, ideas, tap into some creative energy, come up with new solutions that, that maybe have been buried. So I'm like, okay, that's interesting. I hadn't really thought about that. And then since then I've talked to an expert on emotional intelligence and empathy. And she talked about the fact that how curiosity can be really the key to understanding why it is that people think differently than we do, or when we've got a conflict, how do we use curiosity to see things from their perspective? I'm like, okay. And so you get the picture. I'm starting to see curiosity as everywhere I look. And of course, as you know, like the more we focus on something, the more stuff we happen to see. So that's actually, I think that's probably what drew me to some of your content on LinkedIn. And then we struck up a conversation. I'm like, hey, you know what? I think we should work together. And we work together with this client. So I've just been obsessed a little bit about this, which has led me to this conversation. I'm really excited to explore from somebody that kind of works inside curiosity to solve lots of different problems, kind of what your perspective is on it from the inside, if that makes any sense.
I mean, I think I go back to what I said before. I think it's the most undervalued, underleveraged things that you can do in business or life. Sometimes when I give talks, I say, okay, think about and write down, if you can, the last time you actually felt heard and understood. It's really sad. That exercise turned out to be so sad, I don't do it anymore. And if I extrapolate that out to on a global or geopolitical perspective, what has happened to our leaders' ability to talk to each other and listen and try to understand and get to some common ground? Or, well, I could point to any, it's not just geopolitical leadership, it's any faction or tribe, that funny thing is, it's free and it's not hard. Curiosity. It's not really not that hard. And I'm getting sad thinking about it. Like, it's just unbelievable. Everyone, and I think the social media, smartphones, whatever, the amplification of the self, the selfie style philosophy that everyone has, too many people have adopted. It's the antithesis of listening. It is amazing if aliens landed here and they looked around and they saw people in the most beautiful spots, historical places on Earth, with a selfie stick. They would just say, oh, we could take these guys. We could take these guys in 5 minutes. They are preoccupied. All they're armed with is selfie sticks, and we can beat them up. I like this conversation already, because I haven't really talked about this in a while, but I feel so strongly about it. So I'm trying to just use the spirit of the growth mixtape. Like, it's an area of growth for a lot of people in a lot of ways. And I'm not limiting it to just what we talk about all the time, business and stuff. I don't even know if I answered your question.
No, I love that so much, Bob. It makes me think of a couple things. One, your talk about the selfie. I just had somebody reach out to me last week whose family is going to Graceland. And I've been, Elvis's place in Memphis. There. And I've been there a couple of times. And so they were just asking me, hey, I know you've been there. Do you have any tips, et cetera? And I said, well, if you're an Elvis fan, because I'm probably a bigger fan than most, what I really noticed last time was that people would, pay like $100 to do the tour. And they basically race through the house, take a picture, and then race to the next room. Like Graceland's not that big a place. They were through the house in like 6 minutes with a couple selfies in the jungle room and the TV room. And I'm like, I'm just standing back, like, I'm letting people fly by me. Cause I'm sitting here, I'm soaking in the birthplace of rock and roll, and I'm in no rush to go anywhere. But that was one thing that struck me. You're absolutely right.
Did you ever, I would try to trip them as they ran by. That's how I feel.
Like, you're in the jungle room. Like, where are you going?
Yeah, I would have to say that where I am at this moment is a small town in Delaware on the eastern shore near the ocean. And it's one of the things I like here is the pace and the lack of what we're talking about. Mm. It's just not like that here. Not because it's not beautiful. It is. In fact, there's they sell a few little bumper stickers for towns, like BB is Bethany Beach, RB is Rehoboth Beach, just a little thing. And one of them is LSD, which is hilarious. And it stands for Lower, Slower Delaware. And I've kind of taken to that. Like, it's just refreshing to not be around some of the nonsense that you see. And then not so much recently, but when our kids were growing up in the Washington, D.C. area where our primary house is, it's just unbelievable. This sort of selfish behaviors and the competitiveness and all that, which is a form of not being curious. And I was thinking the other day, maybe in preparation for this, I can't recall if it was exactly because of this, but the most amazing and important things that have ever happened in the world were because someone wanted to know something that they didn't already know. They were exploring something and exploring is a form of curiosity. So a lot of things we take for granted that we have that are because one person was curious.
Yeah. You've touched on something already, and I was curious on your perspective on this. Let's take curiosity, for example. Like, we're born so curious. I love the saying, when a child points to a bird and asks, what's that? They're looking at this weird thing with wonder, and it's got two legs, but it doesn't have arms, and it's got feathers and a beak. What is that? We say, oh, that's a bird. And then everything that looks like that is a bird forever. We've sort of lost that opportunity to, well, what's interesting about that? And it just seems like curiosity is one of those things that's kind of like, not beaten out of us, but just we ask a couple of stupid questions when we're 5 years old, and that's it. I can't tell you how many meeting rooms I've sat in feeling like I was the stupidest person in the room and never said a word. And then somebody eventually says, I'm sorry, but am I the only one that has no idea what's going on? Everybody's like, oh my God, thank God somebody said something. Like, I've got that, I carry that fear around with me all the time. And I wonder, what do you think it is that makes people so much less curious?
I don't know. I mean, I think, first of all, I've said those exact words that our curiosity is sort of beaten out of us. But the way I write it is, when I've written about it, is that you grow up with it, and then your curiosity diminishes as your responsibilities increase. Some people stay curious their whole lives, don't get me wrong, but you have less energy to be asked why and just have to get it done. I remember digging in the yard for no reason with a friend of mine. I don't know why we were digging. It was just interesting. And we found some interesting rocks, and maybe we thought we were going to get to the other side of the world. I don't know. But my dad walked by, and he was in a suit, and my friend was mortified that we were going to get in trouble. And my dad said, oh, let me know if you find anything interesting. It looks like fun. And I always think that he could have gone the other way. He could have said, you are messing up the lawn. Stop. And so, maybe the curiosity, he was a very creative person and very curious, and very self-effacing, probably knew more than most people he was talking to, but they would never know it. And, I think that was a good role model for me. I think we are, just to answer your question a little more directly, I think the world does belong to the talkers to some extent, the communicators, and the greatest talkers and communicators or the most successful ones are the ones who are on to something that hopefully they found by curiosity that they can speak about and that people are interested in. But I think that we are not trained to be curious. We're trained to talk and pitch and do elevator pitches and create slides, you know, talk about ourselves and stuff like that. And to some people, that's a big turnoff.
Yeah. So you mentioned a bit about your dad. I just wanted to step back. I'd love to know a little bit more about your journey, because I don't know if you were a young boy, maybe digging holes in the yard, saying, I'm going to grow up to be a professional listener and teach people how to chase their curiosity. So how do you get from A to B?
I think I marched down a path professionally, or starting in college, I guess, marched down a path that was not something that I chose or was intentional about. I was kind of a lemming in a way. I had been given strong signals of certain strengths I had that were creativity and writing, but that's not what I studied. And I just kind of went down and was a business major. And I don't know why. I don't remember making a decision. So, and that extended into my career after quite a while, not a short period of time. You know, I realized that I was the proverbial square peg in a round hole. And you learn that by hitting certain ceilings and getting fired. And then you have to become curious about what's going on. And I was in marketing. So the next logical thing was to become a marketing consultant. And that was me kind of being a fractional chief marketing officer for tech companies, mostly in, almost all in the Washington, D.C. area. And along the way, I was meeting with a founder and I said, tell me about your business and why do customers buy from you? Why do they not buy? Why do they stay or go after a year? What problem are you solving? And I wasn't grilling him. It was the first conversation we had. And as he was talking, we both realized that he was not confident in his answer. It was just a very candid, open conversation. And I just said, I am not here to tell you that you're ready to spend dollars on like marketing, like making noise. But I do think you should do a customer listening tour. And I would be delighted to do that. And I had never done one before. I didn't plan to say it. And I did it. And because this person was so curious and enlightened, he said yes. And that was almost 2,800 customer conversations ago. So I've done a lot of listening tours since then. And that, so those were listening tours to understand how my clients should, what they should be selling, how they should sell it, how to position messaging and stuff. And eventually I shed all the other outsourced chief marketing officer stuff, fractional CMO stuff that I was doing, like all the day-to-day stuff that I turned out I didn't really enjoy. And I was just doing this strategy work informed by customer listening tours. And I thought this was it. I thought this was the best thing ever because I was doing work I liked. It was very high value and it was very different. I'd rather be different and have people come to me who are interested and who get it than chase a lot of stuff and rub sticks together in the woods to create a spark somewhere. So I wanted something that was different. This was different. It happened organically. And then, so I'm doing that and I'm starting to enjoy asking interesting questions and listening and all that stuff. And then one day I was introduced to someone who looked at my stuff and said, you should be teaching people how to have these conversations, especially in this area called customer success, which is how I met you. And that was 4 years ago. And the teaching part has now become my favorite thing to do. It certainly wasn't intentional. It was accidental, but I do think that I was open to and ultimately driven by what I was good at and what I wanted to do. What I mean by that is, I left out a step that I did a customer listening tour of my own once or twice. And I said to people I had worked with, you know, I'm sure I'm good enough at some stuff, but is there something that you really think stands out? Is there something I'm great at? And if the feedback was consistent, it wasn't everything I hoped, that they didn't throw in the things that I wanted them to say, but that's the point. You have to have courage to be curious to that extent. And that led me to this whole listening tour stuff. And leveraging my creativity and listening skills and understanding and business savvy to do the work that I ended up doing. And so that part of it was intentional, but that was only, I don't know, 10 or 12 years ago. And so imagine if you're able to do that early enough in your career to really end up for your entire career or life doing what you're meant to do. But I'll just end by saying the lesson, if anybody's interested, is what, you know, I, at some point you sort of like, okay, I'm fully baked. I'm going to focus on my kids. And as they were growing up, one of them in particular, I kept saying, you know, when you're born, no one hands you a passport or an itinerary that says you're going to get really good grades, go to a brand name school, get married, have kids, buy a house. No one says that to you or gives you that. But the vast majority of people do that, or a lot of people do that. Why? I'm curious. And it's because it may be right for them to do that if they decide to do it. But if they haven't considered anything else, like, hey, I'm an individual. I don't know if I want to do this or that. Or what if I don't get good grades? Is that going to screw everything else up? And I'm not sure he would say this, but it helped him understand, don't compare, treat yourself as an individual. It's your journey and you're in control of it. But then the punchline is, you know, I was talking to myself. I was talking to him, but it had a huge impact on me because I had to get used to the idea that he might not go to college. In our neighborhood, that's like, oh my God, what? Jonathan's not going to college? What happened? What's wrong? Fuck you. And so as he let go of that idea, he became more academically successful, I guess. And I was able to let go of it and teach myself something. Don't get me started on the cost of college in the US and what a scam it is. Because once colleges realize that everyone's going to college and they have to, otherwise they're going to be failures. You know, that's the part of the American dream. They can make the price whatever they want. And then people will borrow and beg and steal and go into debt. You really got me on a good day.
Well, I love that. I swear there's not a day that goes by that I don't think about that, because I've got two kids that are, one that's in college and one that's starting. And you're absolutely right. I didn't give any thought to what I was good at. I guess I got decent, you know, in high school, you try a spattering of different things and you get higher marks in one thing and lower marks in another. And then, okay, so I guess you're going to take a couple more courses on that. And then you apply to schools and, oh, I got into this school. I guess I'm going to go take that, right? And then you get offered a job. Oh, I guess I'll take a job. And then I get promoted. None of this was intentional or purposeful. And all of a sudden you're 30 years old. It's like, what the... I mean, maybe every once in a while people get shit lucky and be like, wow, I freaking love this. But I guess my point is, looking back at my kids at this age, I'm just doing my best to make sure that they understand that they've got the freedom, especially in their 20s, to do whatever they want to do.
They should. But there's a lot of pressure. A lot of pressure, though. The guardrails of society. I coined a term, the lazy river effect. You know, it's just, if you've ever been on a lazy river, like in a resort where it's just keeps moving and takes you, you're not going anywhere. It's just, you know, you're not working either. You're not working very hard. It's just kind of, you go with the flow and whatever you think the expectations are. For a lot of people, it works. It's fine. Or they know what they want to do. It's okay. Good for them.
You mentioned hitting a ceiling and getting fired. I feel like there's a story there.
I think I was pretending to be an executive. I was pretending to like what I did, and I kind of pretended by working hard and treading water a lot. And I was not easy to work with, as much as people might be surprised now, because I'm, you know, just more mature. But I was an asshole. I have it in writing that I was an asshole. I do. It's sad. And I didn't take the lesson. I didn't explore it at the time enough. Like, what's going on here? Just look for another job. Now, in fairness, we had obligations and responsibilities, so maybe getting another job at that point was the right thing to do. But to my point about responsibilities squeeze out the curiosity, like, I don't, maybe some people just go, wow, that was the best thing that ever happened to me. I'm going to take the time to really figure this out. The fit, the product market fit, if you will, the human career fit. I didn't do that. I think I went my first day not working. I went on Craigslist and bought a really nice driver, golf club. It was the most symbolically stupid thing I've ever done. It was not pretty. I think I was somewhat successful, but it was an accident and I was pretending. I didn't like managing people. Whatever the opposite of coming naturally to someone, it did not come naturally to me. And I think I was tense and stressed and anxious, and it all showed through. And that's not what you need in a leader.
Yeah, I think a lot of that obviously comes with a lot of reflection. God, I think about the first time I was made a manager. I was maybe 22 and had a small team of 4 or 5 people. And I don't think I was an asshole, and I was doing the best I could at the time, but everything was ass backwards. Like, my team was there to make me look good. And then when I get promoted, I'm going to help you get promoted. But I do think to this day, there's a lot of people put in that position that have never really had, for one thing, have never had a great leader. So they didn't really know what it looked like and have never had any training. And then in 30 years from now, when they look back, be like, oh my God, I give myself some grace for doing the best I could, but holy shit, did I have that backwards.
Like, I don't think anyone teaches this stuff. So I'm not surprised that people get it backwards. I think the soft skills, including leadership, get swept aside for other things very often, including curiosity and listening.
So as somebody that works in this, I'm always curious. I mentioned my conversation with Rob earlier. It's one question that I'm always interested in, specifically with Rob, is I was asking, because he produces and writes music for TV and film. I'm like, can you ever just go to a movie and enjoy it? And so I'm wondering, in your from your perspective, can you just go to a party or just sit in a meeting and just be a passenger or enjoy the event without sitting there going, wow, that person is really not paying attention and looking for all these signals?
Yeah, I'd like to think that I'm present in those situations, in the not thinking about what I would do differently. I probably am a little more sensitive to people who are obviously trying to dominate a conversation. They're obviously not interested. They keep talking over. They keep shifting back to what they want to talk about. I am probably sensitive to that. Mm. I think in family settings, it's a lot harder because everything is tied to emotions and triggers and stuff. You know, I see it there.
Yeah.
And I'm sure my family sees it with me. I know for a fact they do. We've talked about it. So, but no, I'm able to be present.
It's interesting. I think a lot of people, if you ask them, would say, yeah, I'm a good listener, especially if they're leaders or they've had some success at work. They'd say, yeah, I've been told I'm a good listener. How do people get started with trying to understand what their gaps might be and how to start being a little bit better at this, you think?
I don't know. That is a good question. There is a statistic too that says 80% of people think that they are above average listeners, which of course is statistically impossible. How do they get started? They have to have a reason. People have to have a reason to get started on something like that. There has to be an event or a reason or a desire to get better at anything and any skill. Sometimes it's a very bad experience that forces them to look inward. Sometimes it's a boss, superior saying, you're like a serial interrupter. You're not really listening. And it's getting in the way of this or that. You know, there's a million triggers or reasons that I can think of. I don't know. I haven't researched it. I don't know how much it comes up organically. I do think there's a much better body of work out there if for people who do or are interested. And I would point them to a couple books. One of them is called You're Not Listening by Katie Murphy. And she's the one who talks about this concept I referenced earlier about when you're in a conversation, try to support versus shift. Like, try to go with what they're saying for a lot of reasons. I'm not going to get, I mean, it's a long list of benefits of doing that versus just keep coming back to, like, you know, I'm talking about my kid just did this and the other person has to say, oh, well, my kid did that, you know, kind of the one-upping, shifting. The other book is a guy named Oscar Trimboli. He teaches people how to get better at listening in business. And he's a globally recognized expert, someone I follow religiously. His podcast is great. And one, just a snippet from him is he says that part of the listener's job is to help the speaker clarify their thoughts. And when I first read that, I was like, no, it's not. It's to understand what they're saying. The more I thought about it and the more I apply, I had it in the back of my mind as I was doing the work that I do. And it's true. When you ask a much more interesting question, which is something I try to teach, the other person's hearing that, they've never heard it before posed that way. And they have to, that means they're thinking of something to say that they haven't shared before. So they're listening to themselves talk, and sometimes they hear it and they double back and change something, or they say, I hope that makes sense. You know, they're looking for validation. So I always say, like, you have to wait till the echo of their last word and then count to three, like, just because they might say something else, you know, and that's helping them clarify their thoughts. So thank you, Oscar Trimboli, for that nugget. So people can do that, but how they, I don't know. It's a really good question. How they get started. I just think for me, it was an organic realization that I could do this, and I was curious, and that there's a need for it out there, and it has business value. That's what it was for me.
Yeah, I think, you know, you mentioned it earlier. I think, and there's certainly a certain amount of humility that has to come with that. A, that it's important to the people around us, and it does help us create connections. It does allow us to stand out, because sadly it is so rare, but also that we're not as good at it as we think we are. I don't care who you are.
I'm glad you mentioned humility, because I should have mentioned that a while ago. I think some people think humility is a weakness, and so that's why they're not curious. They think they have to have all the answers, which to me, I see that creating a little bit of a barrier with other people, not trust. You know, if you think you have a quick answer for everything, which by definition is almost impossible, then you're not leaving any room for discussion, and you're kind of saying this is the answer, just trust me. And that's a very unhumble approach that right. I think used to work in sales, like keep rebutting. Every time I hear about, it's like, what do we do with objections? It's like, you know what? You make it sound like every objection is there to be overcome. I get it. In sales, your job is to sell. So that's okay. But that's just not how it is in real life. People want to be validated for their objection. You know, it's like, I get it. I understand that's not ideal. Let's talk about why you need it that way or whatever. But humbleness, humility is, there's a shortage of that sometimes, especially in certain circles. And I think there's an arrogance that I already know everything. I know most everything I need to know to be successful. I don't need anything new. Thank you. You know, like when I was, my consulting practice used to be called Chief Listening Officers. And I got a few eye rolls on that. Like, oh, that's clever, or that's cute, like very condescending from people who, I guess their attitude was, of course we have to listen to our customers, which is fine. So what ended up happening was it filtered out, the name Chief Listening Officers did filter out people that I didn't want to talk to anyway. And the people who said, that's interesting. What is that? I love that. What is that? Those are the people I wanted to talk to. And those were the people that led to good things for me.
Yeah.
People would say, who do you work with? Like what size company, what stage, what series, round, venture capital, you know, what industry? And I would say, look, I just want to have conversation. I want to meet curious leaders, and everything that needs to happen after that will happen. When you say that to someone, their brain goes in a different direction and they go, oh, I can think of some interesting people who might like this, instead of, okay, so you're a marketing consultant who serves Series B companies who are trying to drive leads. There's 50 people like that. So again, back to differentiation, curiosity and all that is a huge differentiator. And I'll just end that part with what I always tell people is the great American poet Maya Angelou said, people won't remember everything you said. They'll remember how you made them feel. So make them feel like you're curious about them, which goes back to that sad exercise I did in some events. Like, when's the last time you felt really understood and heard? Ugh, I'll never forget the looks on people's faces. So disappointing.
Yeah. And you realize people aren't thinking back about earlier that day or earlier that week. They're going back years. Like they're trying to remember any time it's ever happened.
And it could be personal too. Like, yeah, it's just, but that goes back to like, we all are adults. We have responsibilities. We're busy. So how much time do we have to be curious about our partner and understand what's really going on with them? It's really hard.
Yeah, I love that when you say you just want to work with curious leaders.
Just to be clear, those are the people I'm interested in meeting.
Right.
It's different, a little different than work with, because the work with has an edge of like, I'm already thinking about them as prospects. And I just wanted to clear that up.
Yeah, fair enough. So having seen you in action and worked with, have been fortunate enough to work at a client with you, I've been through much of the training and I've tried to apply it. I said, okay, so let's take it to the next level with some of Bob's new tools. And I actually found it much harder than I thought. I met with a CEO last week and I'm like, okay, so we framed this conversation and I had these questions and I just couldn't really do it. And I think maybe that's because I hadn't really framed the conversation. And so I wonder from your perspective, it's not something you should just be springing on people, because if they're showing up thinking, okay, Bob, we've talked about a bunch of things. I'm looking forward to hearing your plan. And I start, so tell me about big pictures. I think that framing is really important. So can you talk a bit about that?
It really is. And I think that I haven't always I've learned a lot about the training that I do and how people experience it. And I want it to be better and better and better. And that is one of the things that I found, that people see the list of questions that I teach and they think that, you know, they feel like, okay, I have to go out and ask a certain number of questions, but the positioning in advance is so critical because it's different and they're going to feel the questions are different. And you're not asking about the normal things like, tell me about us, tell me about us. It's important to ask for a step back conversation. Or in the conversation to say, like, I was wondering if it's okay here at the beginning to just take a step back. And I just wanted to ask some questions about more 30,000 foot questions about what's going on in the business or what's going on in your market. The first question I usually ask goes like, hey, so let me ask you this. If I could sneak into your next board meeting or your executive leadership meeting, what's the big priority or challenge that I'd hear them discussing for the next year or two?
Yeah, that's something that I'm going to start doing more of. I really like that. And we've heard a lot of people will say, okay, let's be specific about what this meeting is about. This is a decision meeting, or this is an alignment meeting. We're here to make sure that we're agreeing and aligned on these, you know, sets of things. And a step back conversation or a big picture conversation or something is just a different kind of conversation, because if people are coming to expect something different, they're just not going to be in the best headspace for it. I think that's a really good point. Yeah.
I think the positioning and the prep is very, you're right. It is very important. What I've learned and I need to keep remembering is that it's so important that I need to teach that in the beginning of the training instead of at the end, like, oh, by the way, when you have these kind of, because the meat of the training is questions and listening skills. So thanks for the reminder that I need to keep emphasizing the positioning.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. I just found that so rewarding. There's so much there. One of the things that I was going to ask you about, it's something that me and my friends and a lot of people are going through, is like, what is next? A lot of them are coming up on what they are always envisioned their whole lives to be. We talked about just kind of, you know, maybe it's not the lazy river, but by 55, you're kind of like, okay, I guess this is where I'm supposed to be golfing and traveling. And they're like, shit, like what's next? But I'm wondering for you, you know, does staying curious help you figure out how to reinvent yourself? And what are you most excited about next?
So to get to this point, being curious has helped a tremendous amount, as I've indicated, like going out and asking people, what do you think I'm really good at versus just okay at? I'm at a different point now where I've come upon something, stumbled on, or maybe somewhat intentionally, that I want to really keep doing. There's no what's next for me. This is it. It took me a long time to find it or get here. So I want to try and make the most of it, and I enjoy it. And I'm confident about the stuff that I talk about, which as a marketer in the old days, you know, there was no sort of generally accepted marketing principles like there are in accounting. So it's like everyone can kind of make up their own reality. So this is different. This is, I am an actual authority. So I'm trying to make the most of it. I'm not sure how to answer the question, unfortunately, other than that. I'm not a big advice giver for people who are trying to figure out anything big, much less what's next.
Yeah, I think there's more wisdom in there than maybe you give yourself credit for. People from the outside might look at your career and be like, oh, you kind of stumbled into it. But it's because you went out and asked people what you're good at that sort of led you in a certain direction. And I do think that's really important. You know, I have friends that have been doing the same job for 30 years, and it's impossible for them to see opportunities outside of this world because they've been siloed and they've been incredibly successful. And now they're like, well, why would anybody care that I've been selling ads for the Yellow Pages for 30 years? Yeah. Believe it or not, that's still a company. Do you have any idea how many tech companies or other people out there would be able to leverage 30 years of sales experience in an industry that's gone through the turmoil that you have? I mean, name your rate, go find people. And the great thing is, you'll be 55 years old. You don't have to waste your time, like you said, Bob, trying to convince people this is a good idea. Imagine working the rest of whatever days you've got left with only people that think exactly the way you do. And you don't have to, you're not selling anymore. You're just finding people that value what you've gone through and think the way you do. My God, that's what it's all about.
You know, I love that. And I think that's so important for people to understand, but it's hard to get a new perspective. That's really one of the things I'm hearing in what you said is, especially after 20 or 30 years, you can get locked into a perspective or bubble where you start believing that this is, you know, why would anyone else value that? Whatever. There are a lot of things that could turn into. And it's important to have people around you that are going to challenge that, whether it's a therapist or partner or somebody, to say, this thing that you do that you think is kind of like playing out the string is incredibly valuable.
I love that. I love the way you said that. Better said it better than I could. That's been great. The one thing that I just have to ask you, and I don't know, maybe we cut this, maybe we don't. I wonder, because I think about this in terms of me and my wife sometimes, is, you know, if I described, okay, I had a conversation with Bob and I call him Mr. Curious. He's very present. He's very engaged. He really makes you feel heard. He's in the business of teaching people how to be great listeners. She'd be like, oh my God, his wife must be the happiest person in the world. Like, oh my God, he's got to be the best husband ever. Is that what you hear from your wife all the time?
No. I understand why someone might say that. It is, I've said this before, it's so different at home for people. For me, it's emotional. It's charged with real world implications. It's triggers childhood stuff that all factors in that you don't have professionally. You know, just because I'm good at something at work doesn't mean I'm good at it at home. And if, even if I'm good at it at home, doesn't mean it's the most important thing to the other person.
I ask you that in with all, you know, all the love in my heart, Bob, because if my wife were to look, I don't know that she ever has, but it looked at the testimonials on my website about how I'm a great listener and how much, she'd be like, whose website is this?
Right.
Like, who the fuck are they talking about?
So, well, it's a big joke in my family. Oh, chief listening officer. Huh? I hope you're better at it at work than you are at home. I mean, my nickname for a long time was Dr. No, because every time the kids would open their mouth, I would say no before I even knew what the question was. And that wasn't good either.
Well, I can't thank you for enough for this, Bob. I didn't, you know, it was an interesting conversation because in the spirit of curiosity, I didn't want to have any, you know, preconceived notions of where it was going to go. I just really wanted to, you know, follow our curiosity and let it go wherever that took us. And that's exactly what it did. We ventured into some areas I had no idea that we would talk about. And this has just been an absolute pleasure. I can't thank you enough for this.
I really thought it was a great conversation from my perspective, and I hope the audience feels like it was interesting and that they maybe got something, a thing or two out of it. And I think you are a great conversationalist, and it shows in your other episodes, the ones I've listened to. And today I felt like a different kind of lazy river. It was just like, I wasn't nervous. I wasn't anxious to get my points across because I felt like you were handling it so well, and it's just great. So thank you for the opportunity to share some perspectives.
I appreciate that. That means a lot to me, especially coming from you, Bobby. Thanks again.
My pleasure. Thank you.
The Growth Mixtape Podcast with Bob Mathers is produced by Bespoke Projects. Music by Je M'appelle Walter Cronkite. If you enjoyed this episode, please take a moment to follow and rate us. When you do this, it helps to raise our podcast profile so that more people can find us. If you want to connect, you can find me on LinkedIn using the link in the show notes.